Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay? Thank you. So thank you, everyone, for coming. Really appreciate it. My name is Venkat Ayyadevara, and I'm a program manager in the Outlook and Office 365 ecosystem team. I specifically, my team owns the APIs, and we're here to talk about how you can use Microsoft Graph to reach not just cloud users, but on-premises users as well. And I'm presenting with Deepak.
Hello, everyone. My name is Deepak Singh. I'm a program manager on the Outlook ecosystem team as well.
Thank you. So we're really excited about this. How many of you, quick show of hands, how many of you have been to the overview of Microsoft Graph yesterday? So some of you have. Have any of you, how many of you have played with it so far? Nice, great. So, you know, so far, what we had done is it's been mainly connecting to online resources, mailboxes, files, etc. And what we're going to talk about is, for those of you who are not familiar, a quick overview of Microsoft Graph. I'm going to keep it brief because it looks like many of you have already been to the overview session. We're going to talk about what are the benefits of actually connecting through Microsoft Graph to the online and the on-premises resources. We'll go a little deeper and see what the architecture looks like, couple of flows. Some developer guidance as you look at writing line of business applications or maybe general purpose applications for others to consume, where you're trying to target both the on-premises environment and the online environment. This is primarily about connecting to on-premises Exchange 2016, which is part of the hybrid deployment. So we're going to walk through what are the configuration steps you have to take to be able to participate in this. And what we're announcing is support for hybrid in preview. And we're going to walk through, here's the set of things we are looking to do before we exit preview. And more importantly, here are the asks we have of all of you to try it out and give us feedback so we can incorporate it and make sure that when it exits preview, it works great for all of you. The key takeaway, just to reinforce, very simple. If you have an app or a background or a service, a daemon service, which needs to connect to both on-premises and cloud mailboxes of a hybrid tenant, you can do so easily by just going to one endpoint, which is Microsoft Graph. And the reason we have done it, we have worked on this, and we're really excited about the preview, is number one, the programming model becomes much simpler. You got one API endpoint, one auth mechanism to reach online and the on-premises mailboxes. Unlike some of the older API surfaces Exchange had exposed, which also my team owns, this one, because it uses OAuth, it means that the app never collects the password itself, and we can respect your authentication policies, such as two-factor auth, much easier to program with, especially if you're not using .NET or Java, because there's a variety of platforms today. Companies develop their internal applications in, or you know, software vendors who cater to the enterprise space develop in, and the REST APIs give you make it much, much easier to program in. And it's available for you to go try it out and give us feedback. Quick overview of Microsoft Graph. What this really is this is a single API endpoint for accessing data. And Microsoft Graph does a lot more than what Exchange has, mail, calendar, contacts. It also lets you access a user's files in the cloud. It lets you go against Azure Active Directory in the cloud. And that's huge because most of the time, even if you're writing a simple application which needs to deal with a user's mail or calendar, often you have to go to directory anyway to resolve a name. Somebody's typing in a recipient's name, you need to go resolve it. So very quickly, you start accessing other workloads. It also lets you traverse data. What does that mean? You can really navigate. It is a graph. You can start with a meeting. You can pick one of the attendees. You can say, "Go, I want to see what files they have in OneDrive, which they have authored." You can go to the files, and you can see who has reviewed it or who has last looked at it, and so on. So it's truly a graph. On the cloud, we already have started computing some insights. For example, keeping a list of who are the people, who are the set of people a user works with. may not be just in their team, maybe in other teams, but who are the people they most communicate with, meet with, work with, and these insights are being generated in the background through these sometimes very expensive computation processes, and those are available as insights for you. Plus, because you can access data from different workloads, you can generate insights which are built on logic unique to your own needs, your enterprise's needs, so you can do that. Here's an example of an API we offer, which is a list of trending documents. What are the set of documents your colleagues are reading? In large companies, often we hear this complaint, I can't keep track of all the things going on. Give me a prioritized list which I could go off. And this one goes, first looks at the people you work with, what documents they are looking at, and then we'll generate a prioritized list. And we have built one endpoint to access enterprise information, Office 365, school information. We have a lot of educational institutions using Office 365, personal, Outlook.com, OneDrive Consumer. And that's huge because for enterprises, they want to have a large selection of applications to pick from. But for these software vendors, they need to be able to go after a large market. And there's a lot of applications, there's a lot of scenarios which actually bridge consumer and commercial. And in those cases, we have increased the incentive for those software companies to go invest because they can go after a larger target market. So that's the goal. And this is the URL, graph.microsoft.com. The state of the world before Graph was there was Exchange had its own Auth and APIs, SharePoint had its own Auth and APIs, Azure Active Directory had its own Auth and APIs. Usually diversity is great, but in this case, it doesn't work so good. And so we got that feedback loud and clear. So we started working hard to try and unify it. And what we've ended up with is a unified endpoint, one auth. You can access all these resources. And this is really important because in the older model, the learning curve was steep and the return on investment wasn't as great for of developers working on it because they got to go learn all these different things, read the documentation, make it work together. So that's the problem we're trying to solve by making it much easier. And there's a variety of information you can get from the graph. Here are some sample queries. This is by no means an exhaustive list, but it gives you a good idea. And one of the things you will see, I'm just giving you a teaser here, key to making hybrid work is recognizing that some capabilities are cloud only, some are available both cloud and on-premises, and we want to make sure that for any of you building an application for your own consumption, your organization, for others, that you get clear-cut errors from Graph so that you know why some capability is not available for a certain user. So with that, before we go into any details, I'm going to turn it over to Deepak so he can actually show it working, and then we can go into the details.
Thank you, Venkat. So we know that Microsoft Graph works beautifully with Office 365 mailboxes and accounts. So what I'm going to try to show over here is how does it work with our on-prem accounts. So we have Mr. Lincoln Haney. He's a user in the hybrid tenant, and his mailbox is present online. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to show that his mailbox is present online. I did not want to show this. Yes, I'm going to show this. This demo comes later.
And we'll make it bigger.
Yeah, we will make it bigger. Okay. So right now what I've done is I've logged into my Exchange machine, and I'm going to show that, hey, this user is actually present on-prem. So let me do... So my user is Mr. Lincoln at thbeta.exchcloud.com. Let's go to his mailbox. We see that his mailbox is present on TH16 beta server, which is actually the server where I've logged on to. So this is my on-prem server. Now I'm going to show what his OA looks like. Let me minimize this. I'm accessing this on-prem user's OA. One thing to notice over here is please look at the URL which the user is accessing. It is not outlook.office365.com, but it is actually mail.thbeta.exchcloud.com, which is actually his on-prem OA URL. So right now we are accessing his on-prem OA URL. So let's log into his mailbox and see what happens. Okay, so we know that his mailbox is all functional. You can see his mail, calendar, contacts, and everything. I have tried to build a similar app. It's not as versatile as OAuth, but something, I tried to do the same thing. So what I've done is I've tried to build a simple .NET MVC app, and I've got this, I've just pulled the template from our documentation websites, and I've just built this app quickly. And what I'm trying to do in this app is I'm pulling messages, as you can see on the screen, I'm trying to pull messages, events, calendar, contact for this on-prem user of the hybrid tenant. So let's try to get that. So I want to take a moment over here to say, like, the moment I try to log in, it takes me to login.microsoft.com, which is very important to notice is like, hey, my app is not getting the credentials of the user, or my app is not taking the credentials of the user. It's AAD, or Azure Active Directory, that is taking this credentials from the user, and then it's only I only have the token which is given by the by AAD. So it's much safer. My app does not get any credentials of the user, and how to manage these apps is totally in control of the admins.
And in this case, the tenant has been set up to actually have AAD perform the authentication. If we were to log in using our Microsoft credentials, we wouldn't even log into Azure Active Directory. We would go to the on-premises ADFS server. So if you have an on-premises server which performs authentication and you've set it up that way with Azure Active Directory, we would respect that.
Yeah. My app was, this app was created and registered on Azure Active Directory. Very simple once again, and it's published in Azure. So now as you see, the first thing which I did was get messages. Oh, before going into the details, let me give you a little background or layout of the app. The first left-hand box which you see gives me the token which I received from AAD. The second box is the HTTP response which I've got for this. When I've tried to do /me/messages for this user, I've got a 200 response. The third box shows me what is the actual response, JSON response that I got back from Graph. And the fourth box is actually showing the headers which I have received back. The point to notice over here is when I have tried to access the messages of this user, I am not going to the on-prem REST URL. My app is just going to the Graph URL, that is graph.microsoft.com/v1.0. This is very important. Right now, my app does not need to worry about the location of the mailbox. Graph takes care of it. I just go to Graph and ask him, hey, give me the messages for this user. Graph automatically figures out where the user's mailbox is and then pulls the messages or any other entities from the user's mailbox. So this is very cool. So now, as you can see, I've got messages. Similarly, I can get the user's events, his contacts. I can even get the user's mailbox settings. For example, what is the OOF setting, what's the out-of-office settings, I can get and set you all those stuff using my apps. So this shows that, hey, now Graph is able to serve both the Office 365 and the on-prem users of a hybrid tenant. So now, back to Venkat.
Thank you, Deepak. We thought we'd show you it actually works before we go into all the details. So why is this so important? Deepak and I touched on some of the points, but actually let's go through it. And once again, let's do a before and after. So you have a hybrid environment, you've got some users online, some on-premises. Before we did this work, most of the time, the popular API which developers use is Exchange Web Services. This is a SOAP API we have shipped since Exchange 2007 SP1. And here's the general flow. The app will first ask for the user to enter an email address. Most of the time, it will ask for username and password as well. And that is because Exchange Web Services was developed when the world was largely on-premises, and you had to go order to do something called order discovery to figure out what the EWS endpoint is for that user. And that is an authenticated call because order discovery returns a ton of configuration information, and we didn't want to release that kind of information without the user signing in. And so what happens is this app would first go to the on-premises Exchange server because the order discovered record for their domain is probably there. Then it gets a redirect saying, no, the user is not here. Go try in online with this domain. And it would try, and it would get confirmation. And at this point, it knows it can connect using AWS. Couple of challenges here. We have published the auto discover algorithm, but because it tries through these multiple steps, some of them are Active Directory SCP entries, some of them are DNS, it's complicated. If you're using .NET or Java, we have a managed API. We have a client-side API which you could call auto discover, and then you still need to chase the redirects, but at least you've got some code. If you're using something else like PHP or Python, you gotta implement this from scratch on your own. And it becomes hard. That's quite hard. The second thing is, because the app is responsible for remembering these endpoints, and the process is quite involved, you can't really do this for every AWS request you make. So you need to cache this per user entry somewhere. Remember to keep repeating this process every 24 hours or every 8 hours and update this cache. Or if you get an error saying, hey, this AWS URL is not valid, then you need to remember it. So there's some complexity we're adding to the app. Once you have established the endpoint and connect using AWS, here's the other challenge. It's a very powerful API. It actually does a lot of stuff. But one of the things we have heard from you is finding people who know SOAP APIs and are willing to work on it, that pool is shrinking. And one of the challenges, anytime you want to produce quality app, whether for yourselves or quality services for yourself or for others, is having a really good pool of developers, set of developers building it, which means that it's for us, it's our responsibility to give you the broadest pool of developers you can go recruit or pick from. And with SOAP, one of the challenges is that that pool is getting smaller, and so it becomes harder and harder to find somebody who's willing to work on it. The second thing is AWS is an all or nothing access. There is no notion of granular permissions. So if the user, once the app has access to the user, it can read or write any part of the mailbox. And that means that if the app has got a bug, that exposure to the bug is quite large. And in cases where the administrator, there's this notion of app impersonation where the administrator will provide the application with a service account, it can access a large number of users based on the scope of the service account, so the exposure is even larger. So those are some of the challenges with the old method we had. And you can see this is the on-prem example where in this case it figured out on-premises and then it goes to on-premises. In the new model, with graph in the picture, you have to ask for the email address. You don't need to ask for the credentials because at the right time, so when it calls Microsoft Graph, first Microsoft Graph has a way to figure out, especially for hybrid, whether the user is online or on-premises. And then that's when authentication is performed. And the authentication is going to be performed by Azure Active Directory or the company's or the organization's auth server, whatever they have chosen. And all the app gets is a token. And that token, to get the token, the app has to actually tell the user, I'm requesting these set of permissions. And these are granular permissions. I only need read access to your calendar, or I need read-write access to your calendar, but read access to your contacts. And that's the only thing it can do. Once it has the token, the app just keeps calling Microsoft Graph, and if the user is online, then Graph proxies to the online API endpoint, and if it's on-premises, it proxies to the on-premises endpoint. And it's granular permissions, as I said, which means that the exposure to bugs in the app is much, much smaller, especially if it's only read-only permissions. And the app doesn't need to maintain this cache of per-user AWS or per-user API endpoints, remember it or keep updating it. So those are some huge benefits of the new approach. So the benefits, again, are, number one, Microsoft Graph doesn't support basic auth. It's only OAuth, which means there is no possibility for the app to go, there's no need for the app to go get the user's credentials. And if you request, the picture on the top right shows the login page we see when I log in using my Microsoft account. And this is because Microsoft IT requires me to sign in using 2FA with a PIN or a smart card, and that's automatically enforced. And again, that's not something the app developer is not, is kind of, it's transparent to the app developer. Two, the box in the lower right shows you a set of sample set of permissions. This sandbox is asking for a large set because we want to illustrate the different types, but usually apps ask for much less. But you can see the examples. View your profile, for example, get your display name so you can personalize the app, read and write access to your email, send mail. It turns out, like a lot of our customers have told us, send is such a sensitive thing because if the app can send on your behalf, it's really touching other users. So they want to grant consent to that separate from reading or writing an email. Now that we've gotten past the auth and the granular consent, this is where the fun begins. Number one, like I said before, we are actively investing in generating new insights or providing new information, providing a way to navigate between different nodes in the graph. And now for the first time, the on-premises users will be able to leverage that, at least for the capabilities which exist in their mailbox. Two, you may have chosen to keep the user's mailbox on-premises, but they may be accessing files online. If you need to generate useful views which combine the two, we have some customers who have set up, for example, portals, which is where the users live in, and it has all the resources, files they edit, their meetings, their mails. In that case, you can actually generate that view by just calling one endpoint, and you're getting more value out of the Office 365 SKUs you've purchased. And Graph, we want to keep track of which capabilities are available on-premises versus cloud, and give the app developer meaningful errors. And you know, this is a step in a long journey, and the goal is, just like we started with pure Office 365, then we added consumer, and now we are starting to add on-premises, we want to slowly blend the seams between the cloud and on-premises for you, especially if you've chosen to run these hybrid environments, to make it much easier for you. We will never be able to completely let the seams vanish because the capabilities differ, but we're going to try and blend them as much as possible. For the developers, whether it's developers in your organization, developers you recruited from elsewhere to do some projects for you, or independent software vendors, the simplicity of it is, you know, is great. They go to one auth endpoint to register, and they're done. And if they've already done this before because they were catering to online users, now their app would be valid for hybrid users as well. They don't need to go do anything. The one API endpoint avoids the need for auto discovery, and you can start building compelling views with joint cloud and on-premises content. REST, so these APIs, Graph user is a RESTful API. If you know how to construct HTTP queries and consume JSON and use OAuth 2, for which most runtimes you will find help, you can find libraries which do it, then it's actually the curve. The learning curve is much more gradual, much smoother. And this basically means that the pool of developers you can recruit from is much larger. To make it even easier, what we're doing is we're investing heavily in developing client libraries for all these different platforms. And so that you don't even have to worry about constructing the HTTP queries, you can use programming patterns which are intuitive in the programming language you use. Now, these client libraries support production APIs, so for you to use it with hybrid, we'll need to wait till it exits preview, but at that point, you will be able to use them. And one reason why we're able to generate a larger set of client libraries here is because if Exchange tries to do its own client libraries and SharePoint tries to do its own client libraries, it's hard to find sufficient people to work on it to do a quality job with this many libraries. So we have consciously chosen across many teams to pool our resources and have a dedicated team work on these libraries. And so that's a big win for our developers. So with that, I'm going to go a little deeper into the architecture. So I showed you a very simple picture of what the flow looks like. Let's dig a little deeper. In this picture, what you're seeing on the top is there's a cloud user and on-premises user that belong to the same org, and they're using some kind of web app from their PC. In the bottom, you can see on the left is the cloud Exchange deployment where there's an API endpoint. In the middle is Azure Active Directory, because this is the one which is it's got the directory and it knows which user is on-prem versus cloud. And then on-premises server is to the right. It has two endpoints, and we'll talk about them. One is a REST endpoint we've just added to Exchange 2016, and a new auto-discover JSON endpoint, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as well. But let's talk about the flow for a cloud user. So the app calls Microsoft Graph. We go check, and Graph will go check AAD first to see if this user is present, this email address, because I've just entered an email address, is present in AAD. If it is, it goes back to tell Graph, okay, you need to go connect to the cloud API endpoint, which is this outlook.office.com. And I've kind of, for sake of simplicity, I've taken away the auth here. There's actually auth performed before any response is returned. But once a response is returned, it just goes back to the app. So all the app had to remember is number 1 and number 6. In the on-premises case, once again, the request goes to Graph. There's a check from AAD to AAD. And AAD says, no, this user is not here. Then that's where the Graph actually does the auto discovery. You know, there's no way to avoid the auto discovery step to figure out where the endpoint for on-premises is. The big difference from before is now Graph is doing it. And so it's Graph which has to maintain that cache. And it eventually finds, through DNS records, it finds this JSON endpoint, gets confirmation that the user is there, and then auth is performed and we connect to the on-premises REST API endpoint, a response is sent back. And the app, in this case, once again, there's only two things the app has to worry about, calling MS Graph and getting the response back. And although there are a larger number of intermediate steps performed for the on-premises user, it's hidden from the app itself. So to do this, starting Exchange 2016 Cumulative Update 3, so CU3 was made available in September, we added a REST API endpoint. This is what it looks like. For those of you administering Exchange, you have an Exchange namespace, /API/v2.0. What is this v2.0? That's our latest production version. So because the Outlook APIs were launched before Microsoft Graph, Microsoft Graph v1, which is our Microsoft Graph production version, calls the v2.0 endpoint. And the job of this REST API is to receive and process requests from Microsoft Graph. It requires OAuth 2.0. And there's a requirement here, though. For Graph to be able to access it, that /API must be accessible via public internet. Autodiscover JSON endpoint is autodiscover/autodiscover.json. It's a new RESTful address. One reason we introduced a new endpoint was two things. One was, in the new flow, there's no auth needed because the auth will come later. All this JSON endpoint returns is a URL saying, go here for REST API calls. And that's when the REST API endpoint will tell the user where to authenticate to, or will tell Microsoft Graph where to authenticate to. So the second is, and the reason we set it up this way is, one was to avoid the auto discovery burden for the app, but the second one is, when you require OAuth, if you need authentication for auto discover, you end up in these funky states sometimes where the user logs in once, auto discover takes basic auth, and then when you get to OAuth, you have to enter your credentials again. And users hate having to do multiple auth, so we have eliminated that from the flow. And once again, this must be accessible via the public internet. So I'm going to switch tracks and go to building an app or service for hybrid users. What are the things to keep in mind? We have done our best to try and make this as simple as possible, but here's something the app developer must be aware of. To build a clear and concise or a coherent experience for the users and have a meaningful user experience, they have to account for the fact that some capabilities are going to be available only in the cloud or may be available in the cloud before they're shipped on-premises. And the percentage of users in a hybrid tenant varies anywhere from 0 to close to 100%, depending on where they are. In some cases, the customers exist in that steady state situation where they have some on-prem, some cloud. Some use hybrid as a way to go kind of dip their toe in the cloud waters, and they may have a small number of test users in the cloud. In some cases, if they decide to go ahead at the end, they end up with 100% in the cloud. So the app developer should not assume a certain mix Also, often users get moved around. A user may be in on-premises today and cloud tomorrow, or vice versa. And this is important because, especially if you move from cloud back to on-premises and some of the things you did with the app don't work now because those buttons are grayed out or not available, we have to tell them why, right? And we will do our best to return an error, but the user has to have some experience around it. That's one. Or if you're developing a daemon app, you have to make sure you fail gracefully in those cases. Also, our recommendation is in these cases that the developer make sure that the instructions provided to the user, hey, I use this feature heavily, now I can't use it anymore, what should I do? Make it customizable so that an organization can direct the user to the support channel it finds most convenient. Different organizations support the users in different ways. And we want to make sure that these apps, while they empower these users, don't unwittingly create a support burden by pointing them all to the same support channel where that channel may not work great for some customers. So that's one important piece. The second thing we have done is, you know, we require the API version explicitly in the URL. And this is to avoid any confusion what you're calling, but we do keep up, you know, because of the cadence at which these APIs get enhancements, often we'll ship new non-breaking changes into this without upping the version. Usually we up the version only when we make a breaking change, which means that don't assume that just because two users are in v2.0 or v1.0 that they have the identical feature set. They may not. And the way that gets reflected is, let's say you go always fetch a message. Be prepared for the message to return some optional properties, which you don't know what they are, and the app should not fail because of it. And different users are going to be on different builds. By the way, the version of the builds is true even for the cloud, but it becomes even more important as you think of on-premises because Exchange Online gets updated multiple times a month, and on-premises, we ship a quarterly CU, which is what we ask organizations to update. But again, they're all not going to update on the exact same day. It depends on their schedule. So users are going to be in different versions. That's something to keep in mind as well. Other considerations. For those of you who've played with Graph, you would already know this. V1 is a production version. We actually have a beta version. And in the beta version, we put even a lot more new stuff, but we reserve the right to make breaking changes there. And after we solicit some feedback and have kind of finalized the API shape, then we push it to V1. For hybrid and for on-premises users, we are only going to support the production versions. And this is to avoid unnecessary churn for the on-premises admin, because if we keep shipping the beta on-premises, and it gets even more complicated. So it makes much more sense to just stick with the production versions. And if you want to know what are the sum total of entities and actions supported by Graph, the superset, you can go to this URL I have there called graphmicrosoft.com/v1/metadata. This performs just like the WSDL did for SOAP API. So it gives you all the entities, the actions available. And over time, we're putting richer and richer annotations so you can look at the annotations to see which one supports sync, which one doesn't support sync, which supports filter, and so on. And we have an API documentation site, graph.microsoft.io, lots of resources, so you should go check it out as well. Preview-specific limitations. When you make a request for a specific user mailbox, because there's always a OAuth token, today a really popular way of accessing is just saying go to graph/version/me. And me, shortcut for saying, I want to go to the user's mailbox who's mentioned in the token. We're working through a couple of issues. Today, you have to explicitly mention the user's email address. You can do that today by doing /user/email address, and it'll work fine. But we are going to address this soon. The second is notifications for cloud are supported today using webhooks. And what is needed for webhooks is if you write a server-side app, you have to make this listener endpoint available, and Microsoft Graph will keep posting back notifications as their notifications. And that's not yet supported for on-premises because we had gotten feedback even when we did EWS, you know, when we worked on Exchange Web Services before, where many organizations don't want the server, their on-premises server, to initiate the connection to this outbound app through the firewall because then they have to open up the firewall. to post notifications. And we want to incorporate those learnings. So what we're doing is we're working on streaming notifications similar to the web services one so that the app can initiate a long-lived connection. And at that point, the server can keep piping back notifications. But that's still in the works. Three, you will see that every error message which comes from the on-premises server is appended with the REST APIs for this mailbox are currently in preview. And that's to just remind everybody, this is preview. Don't build production apps yet on this, right? This is a time for you to evaluate it, give us feedback so we can make improvements. And we are anxious to go quickly exit preview. But at that point, you can use this for production apps. Right now, this is mainly for evaluation, giving us feedback. So here's the entities. I had said that the on-premises entities available are a subset of what's available on-prem. Here's some which are available. So mail, of course, mail folders, messages, items, file attachments, calendar groups, all of the calendar entities. And actually, we have a pretty improved experience on reminders and reminder view over Exchange Web Services. Contacts. Also, profile. Profile is interesting because, and this is one reason why we heavily depend on the directory sync companies already set up for hybrid deployments, where the user profile we are fetching for you when you ask for user details is from Azure Active Directory, the user profile. And so we are expecting that there's a full sync. The second, but when it comes to profile picture, especially if you have stored a high-definition picture in the Exchange mailbox, we will go to retrieve it from the on-premises mailbox. So that we'll get the best picture possible. We also support mailbox settings, which is automatic replies, language, and time zone settings. And finally, for data extensibility, we have two forms of extensibility, a JSON-based one called extensions, which we are just in the process of validating. So that's going to show up in the list soon. But we already have support for extended properties. And those of you who have used EWS before and know extended properties is a way to stamp custom properties specific to your scenario, you will be able to leverage that here as well. And so this covers quite, you know, a large portion of the APIs which exist in EWS and on which people heavily build. And so we are looking for feedback, however, from you as to what are the key missing APIs here which you'd like, you want to see added. And we're anyway trying to work on that. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to Deepak to demo modifying the app he showed you before to actually send a message.
Okay, thank you, Venkat. I think you can switch the screen.
Yeah.
The first thing I'm going to do is take the feedback. Oh, hold on. Where is my app? Okay, as you guys saw this app, and on, let's go back to messages. Sign in. Okay, so now we see messages over here. The scenario which I want to build over here is like, hey, it's great that we can read messages, calendar, contacts. How can we send a message from the, can we use Graph to send message and do all other post activities via Graph? So that's what I want to build. Similar to Outlook, when you have a message pane, you have a send button over here. The moment you click it, it opens a create message window where you enter your stuff, where you enter your information, and then it sends a message. I want to build exactly the same thing. So let's go back to my app on the Visual Studio.
Make sure to increase the font size.
I am going to take that feedback and increase the font size. Please let me know when you can see the screen or when you can see in the back. Can you guys see?
Can see now?
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. So being honest over here, I've cheated a little bit. I already have the code which I've commented out. I'm going to uncomment and I'm going to go through the code to tell what am I doing over here. So the first thing which we wanted was on the message view, we wanted a link which will say, hey, I want to create a new message. So I already have a link over here which I've commented. If only I can see my mouse.
Yeah, there
it is. For some reason, it keeps disappearing. I already have a link. So this link takes me to the page where I can enter information to create the message or enter the information for creating message. I already have the view for creating or taking information from the user. So basically, it's a simple tab or simple input tabs are present where the user enters his two recipients from subject body. Nothing much great over here. Let's go to the main logic and show you what we do over here. In order to send mail, we know that we need to have a new permission called mail.send. I have already, in my app, I have already requested that permission, as you can see. So, as you can see over here, mail.send is already requested. So my app had previously got the permission consent for this user to give mail.send. And on the top, you can see the URL which we are targeting. It is graph.microsoft.com. So now let's go to my logic to send the mail. My actual logic is over here, send mail, which I've commented out. Let me uncomment it. And then I'll go through it to say what am I doing in this. Okay, so I'm calling me/sendmail. And the send mail API takes two parameters, or it's when you're posting and the JSON body takes two parameters. One is the message object, which tells you that, hey, I am going to send mail to this person. It's going to send two recipient from and subject additional and the body. And the second parameter which takes is a Boolean, which tells you that, hey, when I'm sending this mail, I want to store a copy of this mail, sent mail in my sent item folders. So as you can see over here, first of all, the first thing which I did was I get the same graph, I'm using the same graph URL and the access token on the top. For some reason, my mouse is not being shown. Then I add all the recommended best practices header. As you can see, one of them is Xanker mailbox, client request IDs. We highly recommend you guys to add this headers when you're making these requests. Next, I created the send mail object where I am initializing two other objects, that is message object. In the message object, I provide all the values which I get from the screen. And then I initialize a second property as well, that is send mail save to send item is equal to true. That basically tells me that, hey, when sending the mail, keep a copy of it in the send folder. Once this send mail object is created, all I'm doing is serializing it. And then I'm making a simple HTTP request, post request with that send mail. And once I get the response of it, and since the send mail does not have any, does not return back any response, it gives me a 201, it gives me a 202, I am just gonna go back to the main screen to show that yes, this mail has been sent. So now this is, I've uncommented this. All I need to do is uncomment another place. This is my method which actually takes the parameters from the screen and then sends it, calls this main method to send mail. Now I've built this, so what I want to show over here is that, hey, it's super easy to build this code and deploy it on Azure, which is what I'm going to do right now. I'm just directly going to publish it. I'm publishing on my Azure instance.
One of the things, as Deepak had walked you through the code, is there was no logic, as you can see, which was specific to on-prem, if on-prem, or if cloud. Because in this case, where the functionality is implementing is common to both, you don't need to worry about it. And that is a big plus. So
I'm going to just take the same Lincoln guy, and I'm going to try to send a mail from his mailbox.
Do you need to refresh the app
first? Yeah, I think I've opened a new one. Let's go back to my login screen. Lincoln. And now I should see a send link page on the messages. I'm going to log in again. Aha. I see a new send item, send an email link. Let's click on it. I have two recipients. Let me add another on-prem user. Do I have anyone in the list? No, I'm just going to add Tim. He's the tenant of, or he's the admin of this tenant. Hello from Ignite.
That's a short message.
So now, as one thing to notice over here, since I've brought you back, guys back to the messages view, which where I'm doing is me/messages collects the message from the entire mailbox, not from a specific folder. Therefore, we can see the message which I had sent, which was in the sent item folder, is being shown on the screen. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch back to the browser, and I'm going to show you whether the Tim guy has received that email. So let's go and see that. I've already logged into Tim's account, and as you can see, Lincoln Haney has sent a hi to this user. Hello from Ignite. And this shows that, hey, now the send API works as well. So as you could see that, hey, how it was easy to build this feature and quickly deploy it so that it's active and it's usable by the users. So now back to Venkat.
Thank you. Obviously, to do this, you have to do some groundwork with the on-premises Exchange environment. So let's see what there is. Number one is the Exchange, setting up the server. You must upgrade to 2016 CU3. I had mentioned this before, but this is important. And you have to run prepare Active Directory explicitly. If we always recommend running prepare AD, but in this case, especially if you're upgrading from cumulative update 2, you need to make sure to do this. And when you run prepare AD, it's doing two things which is required for this scenario. It does a lot of other stuff, but for this scenario, number one, Microsoft Graph is getting registered as a trusted partner application. This is for the OAuth flow to work from Microsoft Graph to the on-premises server. And when you're trying the preview, if you're, you know, you want to try it for some period of time, you've given feedback, you've got a sense of where it is, and now you just want it to be first available in production, what you can do is you can just go in and remove this application, you can remove Microsoft Graph from the list of trusted partners, and at that point, the preview is not going to work for you. So it's a fairly easy way to shut it off till it gets into production. But before you shut it off, we want you to use it, obviously, and give us feedback. And this is something you probably already do, so that cross-premises free busy lookup and some other features work. But the on-premises Active Directory must be fully synced with Azure Active Directory. Why is that? Remember, Azure Active Directory is the one issuing tokens to the app. And the app can only get tokens from Azure Active Directory if it has a list of these users, number one. Number two, so in that case, authentication was done by the on-premise server, but the token to the app is issued by Azure Active Directory. It needs to know the user is. And when the user records consent, says, okay, they grant consent saying, I give this app permission for calendar, to read my calendar, Azure Active Directory records it for the user saying, in this tenant, this user consented to this app. And that gives the tenant admins a way to go audit and look at, okay, what apps have gotten consent from who, and if needed, revoke consent. So that's why we need the on-premises directory. There are some network infrastructure requirements. Number one, you may already have set this up. If you allow your users to connect using Outlook or Mac Outlook from the public internet. We need internet DNS records for the on-premises Exchange namespace, and we need it for the Audit Discover namespace for all your accepted domains, any domain in which you issue email addresses. This enables Microsoft Graph to discover the API endpoint and the Audit Discover endpoint. And as I said before, you will have to make sure that your firewall or application gateway allows access from the public internet to the slash API virtual directory so that the REST API calls succeed, and slash audit discovery, slash audit discover.json virtual directory for API and again for API endpoint discovery. And one other important thing to keep in mind is when the REST API request lands in the on-premises environment, it first will go to the CAFE role, the client access front-end role, and then the client access front-end role looks at the request and has logic to route it to the right mailbox. For it to do this, the CAFE server must be aware of the REST API protocol. And so a requirement we have is in the servers which are in the load balanced array servicing your client Exchange namespace, you have to have 2016 CU3 or later servers, because they are the ones which are aware of the REST API and therefore know how to go route this request to the right mailbox server. And finally, we need you to run hybrid configuration wizard. The HCW update with the steps which I'm going to talk about is coming soon. Right now, to unblock deployment, though, here's the steps you can follow. Number one, from the Exchange Online shell, you have to run this commandlet to get the what's called an initial domain. This is the contoso.onmicrosoft.com domain, which originally you got when you registered, you created this tenant online. The second thing you have to do is go to the on-premises Exchange shell, and you have to add a new authentication provider. So what you're basically saying here is that Exchange will accept tokens issued by Azure Active Directory. It has a service called Evo STS. That's a service issuing tokens to the app. You're basically telling Exchange it's okay to accept those tokens and let the request come through. And the last piece is, this is the last piece of the puzzle. Microsoft Graph goes to AAD and is going to try and ask for a token for the namespace of your on-premises Exchange server. And for AAD to be able to issue the token, it needs permission from you, and you're giving it that permission. You're telling AAD, you're telling Evo STS, it's okay for you to give permission to my Exchange namespace URL. So when Microsoft Graph goes and says, the resource I need a token for from the user is contoso, mail.contoso.com, because the admin has already registered that with Azure Active Directory, it'll issue the token. So that's the last piece of the puzzle. To unblock development, you can use these steps. What we really want to do is we just want to give you HCW update, which you just run, and then that will take care of these steps for you. So from a time point of view, we wouldn't be able to show all of the setup steps, but at least Deepak wanted to show what the state of the world looks like when you have completed all these steps. So I'm going to switch back to Deepak.
Thank you, Venkat. OK, ideally, what should happen is, like, hey, you run your CU3 update, and you run PrepareAD, and the hybrid config wizard. All steps should have been automatically taken care by you. So let's assume that has been done. And I'm going to show what behind the scene, what's the setup going to look like. And after everything has been set up, what is it going to look like? So the first step, which was mentioned, right, was like, hey, upgrade CU3 and run PrepareAD. What that does is it adds Graph as one of the partner applications. Trusted partner applications. So let's see if a trusted partner application Graph has been added as a trusted partner application. So as you can see over here, Graph has been added as a trusted partner application. I'm running this code in the Exchange PowerShell, on-prem PowerShell. The next step which was mentioned is that, hey, when you run hybrid config wizard, we add AAD or Evo STS as the token issuing or auth issuing endpoint to see whether that has been configured on this machine, let's go to and check out the auth server. As you can see over here, Evo STS has been added as one of the token issuing endpoints for this on-prem server. That means token issued by this Evo STS will be trusted by this on-prem server. The third step which was mentioned was like, hey, in order for AAD to issue a token for a specific, the on-prem URL, we need to have registered that URL in AAD or in the exchange service principal name. Ideally, the hybrid config wizard should take care of it. And let's see what happens once that is taken care of. So I am going to switch to the Azure model. No, where is my... One second. So this is my Azure directory module. Here I have already logged into this module using my online tenant admin credentials. Once I've done that, I am going to get my service principal name for Exchange, that is 0002, and see if my on-prem URL has been added to this. So let's do external service principal name. As you can see on the top, my on-prem URL mail.thbeta.exchcloud has been added as one of the service principal name. What that means is now Graph will be able to issue tokens for the, or AAD will be able to issue tokens for this particular endpoint as well, along with these. So now, once all these three steps are complete, or all this configuration is complete, then we'll have a seamless flow from Graph to the on-prem servers. So, cool. Back to Venkat.
So what's next? We need your help. You know, there's a bunch of hybrid, as we start to reach on-premises, there's a variety of ways where you've all deployed your on-premises environments. And we have tried to do our best to kind of decrease the friction, but we would still, there's a lot we can learn from you. Of some of the questions to think about is, as your users are using these, any apps you've tried out, or you get feedback from a few pilot users, what user experience challenges are you facing? Or if you started running some background jobs which deal with both on-premises and cloud users, are there issues you're seeing? How hard is this to set up and maintain? They gave you a bunch of steps. We're going to get the HCW update out soon. But even at that point, are there points of friction you're seeing? Are you finding that, hey, for some of these steps, I have to go file tickets with these other departments, and it's going to take a long time? Or this is kicking off some of the review, and that's a problem? And finally, many of you are in a coexistence environment, and you probably have 2013 and 2016, the load balanced array. Are you able to function where you have enough, you're able to function with only 2016 servers in your load balanced array? From a managed point of view, we'd love all the feedback. And for your developers who are gonna go try these, we believe that the app registration should be easy, but we want you to hold us, like keep us honest. Is it really being easy? Second, the type of errors you're getting, we're working to make it better and better. Right now, we started with a fairly like generic error, but we want to keep improving it. We need to know from you, are the errors sufficient? Are there things, is there more additional information you'd like to see to make your life better or direct the user to the right place or answer the question, avoid them calling someone at all in the first place? Are you happy with the latencies, perf, and reliability? We have already done work in the service where in this new scenario, the service, Microsoft Graph is calling not just another cloud service we own, it's starting to call environments we don't operate, these on-premises servers. And on our side, while we have done things to protect the service, we need to know from you, what do the latencies, perf, reliability look like when you start using Microsoft Graph to go then proxy to these endpoints? What is the feedback your users are giving you? And finally, we're always trying to go put more and more and more code samples out there on graph.microsoft.io, and we'd love feedback from you both in terms of what are the types of scenarios you'd like to see code samples for, is there guidance you would like to see, and hey, we use heavily this programming language and I don't see it represented there, can we add more information? And that'd be awesome. And really, again, right, there's a lot we can learn from you here. Like I said, you know your on-premises environment, you know your users, you know the line of business application you deployed using Exchange Web Service or other APIs much better than we do. And we're looking for feedback from you to see, as you have a hybrid deployment, what would it take for you to now move from using EWS to completely REST and this new programming paradigm? So we need your help. We've already identified some things to exit the preview. Hybrid configuration wizard. Rather than waiting for an error and then telling the user, it'd be great for you to just upfront query on a per user basis and say, this is what's available. It would be an authenticated call, but we're working to give you versions and capabilities so you can query upfront and render the UX accordingly. And a bunch of API improvements, ability to use me instead of user's ID. Me is a very popular shortcut. In fact, you may or may not have noticed Deepak used me in his app. It happens to work for this specific deployment. The reason we recommend users is in some cases, depending on how users are configured in Active Directory and what their UPN is, it may or may not work, and we want to avoid that. We actually have work in progress to completely hide that from the app. We want to add support for notifications. There's at least a few more entities kind of in the pipeline we're validating, and we will go support that for on-premises as well. And Microsoft Graph SDK, I talked about the promise of being able to use all these cool SDKs. We'll certainly want to add support for that. And we have a really nice developer tool called Graph Explorer where you can log in as a user and you can try a request, see the response. And this is one way developers, even more than reading the docs, usually go play with it to help write their app. Today, to do this for an on-premises user, you need the admin to do something. And we want to take that. We want to make it as seamless as the cloud. So that's something we're looking to do, and incorporate your feedback and suggestions. So we want to make sure that this is what we have thought of. Like I said, there's more feedback we're hoping to get from you, and I will talk about how you can provide us the feedback in a subsequent slide. And we want to incorporate those feedback and suggestions beyond hybrid deployments. Here's the things we're looking at. These are very long term. I don't have timelines for these, but number one is, we want to extend support beyond Exchange to other on-premises environments. I put SharePoint as an example, but whether it's SharePoint or on-premises Active Directory, how do we expand the set of on-premises resources available through Graph? That's one. So there's investigations going on. And the second one is, with hybrid, you've already done some work to set up this Active Directory sync, which is needed for OAuth to work. We are working through what is the minimal set of steps you're happy to do, so that even if you have a pure on-prem Exchange deployment, you can actually leverage the Microsoft Graph for the capabilities it offers. And that'd be huge. Then Microsoft Graph could help you connect to hybrid deployments, on-premises deployments, and pure cloud. And the main thing here to solve is, we are trying to see what is the minimal set of steps needed so that we can continue to respect your authentication policies, that at the same time, let the developer register their app in one place for cloud and on-prem and be able to get tokens. And those of you are not, just a quick show of hands, how many of you have on-premises, pure on-premises deployments? Great. I'd love feedback from you saying, is this something which interests you? What would be the minimum bar for you? What are the steps you're willing to take? Are there compelling line of business applications you would have in your company which would actually make the case to go do the work? Obviously, without a hero app, it doesn't make sense to go do a bunch of work, extra work. So all of this would be great feedback for us as we work on it. Resources, for IT administration, Ross Smith, who those of you who work in Exchange Administration may be really familiar with, has written this excellent blog on on-premises architecture requirements. Some of the material we covered here, but he does a much nicer job. And then in terms of development, we have an overview page where you can get started, and then there is the Graph documentation of the APIs itself, and a whole bunch of related talks, by the way, for Microsoft Graph. Some of them obviously are in the past, but at least I want to make sure you have a list so you can go look at the recordings. And the most important one is this, which is later today, because me and Deepak are giving this at 4, so I'm hoping some of you will come there as well, or all of you will. And finally, wrapping up, the key takeaways, just to reinforce. This, we want you to use Microsoft Graph to reach online and on-prem users because it's simple, it's secure, it's way easier than previous programming methods we've given you, and it's available now for you to give us feedback. And in terms of feedback, if you are working on trying to do something simple, you're blocked, then you can just go on Stack Overflow. We monitor that closely, and we try to get back to you quickly. If you're seeing API doc issues because, you know, now these API docs have to talk about on-premises and cloud, and you're not finding the information you need or it's not clear, please just file an issue in GitHub. And for everything else, we got user voice. We look at it closely. Whether it's administration challenges or developer challenges, this is where you can go and post, and we'll, you know, we'll respond. We'll respond back to you. It also, if you, you know, and this is not just for hybrid. Like I said, this is for the pure on-premises customers. If you say, if you do this for me, then I'm willing to go set up the trust with AAD. That'd be great to hear. And also, some of your peers also get to vote on these suggestions. So it's a gateway, great way for us to know which one has broad interest and which one doesn't. So with that, please, you know, these are standard messages we give as part of the Office extensibility. Please go sign up at FastTrack and join the tech community and give us feedback. Thank you for your time. You've been very patient, and we really appreciate it. So thank you. And we'll take questions now. So. So the question is, any plan moving to Exchange 2013? At this point, no, we don't have a plan, because I think the cost of porting the whole REST API is, because, you know, the Exchange 2013 code base is a few years old, would be quite expensive. But it really depends on, I think, because especially for hybrid, I know there's many of you with Exchange 2013. I'm looking for feedback. If we find that there'll be a non-trivial increase in usage if we add support, then it's something we can look at. But the bar is high for us, because it's a lot of code to port back and make sure it works well. Yes, please. Today, so the question is, if you have one 2016 Exchange server and the rest are in 2010, so it's a coexistence environment, will you be able to use it? Today, for the preview, you can't. But in general, how do we support coexistence environments through a 2016 server is something we're certainly looking into. Because things like messages, things like calendar, contacts, tasks exist even in 2010. I don't have anything yet here, but that's something we are looking into. Again, that's another place which I'd love feedback. Would that actually unblock in your case?
Oh, yeah.
Got it. So that's good to know. So we've already, you know, one of the things we haven't tackled for the preview is we kept it simple. We said exclusively 2016, but we know that coexistence is how usually customers operate for some period of time while they slowly move over, and it's something we want to look at, see how can we light up customer sooner. Yep.
Yeah.
Please.
Let's say I just share with online deployment. I'm not using Exchange Online, but I have Exchange on-prem server, like Exchange on-prem. But I also synchronize my user information active directory. Can I also use the Craft API?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we don't care. For us, we're agnostic whether you have 0% users on-premises, mailboxes, or 100%, similarly 0, 100 in the cloud. We just need the full directory sync. And so if you got the full directory sync, you should be able to use it. You do need the 2016 servers on-premises, but you can use it.
Question over here.
Got it. So the feedback is, there are customers moving from an older version, let's say Exchange 2010, to Exchange Online. In their case, 2016 is not on their plan. How do they, because anyway, they're in the process of moving these users online, is there a way we can light up support through Microsoft Graph for users on these legacy servers? Today, I don't have a good answer for you. What that would require, really, in that case, is Microsoft Graph will need to turn around and make AWS calls to the on-premises server, because that's the only option, right? Like backporting REST APIs again, especially 2010 or 2013 is quite expensive. And we can go look into it, but the characteristics of AWS and the fact that it doesn't have granular consent, there's a bunch of challenges around it. Also the fact that it doesn't, you know, Exchange 2010 doesn't support OAuth is another challenge. So we'll go think about it, but I think that one would be a hard one to pull off. I completely understand the demand. Oh, I see.
That's a similar question to what?
Got it. Okay. Then it's the same scenario, which is we'll deploy, we can host the namespace on Exchange 2016 server, but we don't want to move the mailboxes to 2016. We'll keep them in 2013. Whatever older version exists. Can you light up Microsoft Graph for them? I think it's the same scenario. We'll certainly take a look at that. I think the coexistence environment, that's much more doable. Then it's more a question of if the app is really popular, what guidance do we publish to the on-premises admin in terms of scale? For example, depending on the number of users and the number of requests, how many of these on-premises 2016 servers do you need? Some capacity planning, right? But we certainly
we'll
something
go
we can
back
look
and
into
take a
it.
Look at, yeah.
That's great feedback. Great. Any other questions? So the question is there a set of IP addresses we publish for Microsoft Graph which you could use to restrict access? Today we don't.
Nope.
I'll go back and check with the team which operates it if that's a possibility. The only challenge is because they're constantly, you know, we are all constantly expanding the footprint. We have to see, is that a manageable list for both us and you in terms of keeping it out there and you being able to update it? But I'll certainly take the ask back, and maybe I can get your card later to see and get back to you with a response. I don't believe so, because the Graph actually is its own. There's a service called Aggregator Service, and it's running in Azure. Now, it meets all of the compliance and security or whatever requirements are needed to route Office 365 traffic, but it's a separate service, so we'll need to go work with them. Got it. Perfect. So I think what the feedback I'm hearing is just opening it up on the internet is not an option, not something a lot of your customers would do. But if you're willing to publish a list of IP ranges, they're willing to certainly consider that because it kind of scopes down the exposure. Okay, great. That's, again, something we're certainly happy to look into.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Is this something all of you are going to go try out? I'm hoping. Yes? It's great. And again, I think one of the gentlemen asked this question. You don't have to have mailboxes in the cloud. As long as you have the directory sync set up, you can go try this out. Because you going to put the whole
demo? Yes.
We can.
The PPT and everything is going to be present online.
But you're asking about the demo app?
Today,
I think the whole... I think every one of these talks, the question was, will this be available? The whole talk is recorded, and it will be available online on Channel 9. And you will be able to, I don't know how long it takes. It takes a little bit of time for them to put it up. But you'll be able to go to Channel 9, and if you search for our names or the title of the talk, you'll be able to find the entire video. And so whatever recordings are, you'll be able to find the entire video. And the PowerPoint deck is uploaded as well.
Yeah, so the demos, actually there are demos already available or code samples available on graph.microsoft.io, which we can just download those templates and
yeah,
that'll start working.
But this specific one, we can make it available.
Yeah,
too.
We can make it available
so
on
we'll,
GitHub.
We'll put it somewhere
well.
In GitHub and maybe publish.
Yeah.
Put it up, put a link up on graph.microsoft.io. We're happy to do that. That's great. I already got one request for code sample, so perfect. Well, if there's no more questions, thank you for your time. Really appreciated it.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.